Where then does your investigation go? You talk to the witnesses.
Our investigation went towards an Oklahoma connection. And that Oklahoma connection was a guy by the name of Pat Early. He resembled the composite drawing that we had, kind of short in stature, stocky. He was a hitman. He was part of something back in the 70s. There was the Dixie Mafia. The Dixie Mafia, in this area of the country, they were pretty powerful. Kirksey Nix Jr.'s father was a federal judge, I believe. Tom Lester Pugh, Alvin McDonald, Pat Early. I think that crew had traveled out to Arizona, and I'm wanting to say had done a residential robbery on maybe some of the LaFortunes that were vacationing in Arizona. They were everywhere. One of their most famous things is they traveled from Jones Riverside Airport by plane to McNary County, Tennessee, and did a hit in McNary County, Tennessee. Their target was just injured. His wife was murdered. It was in a drive-by shooting of two mobile vehicles. Turns out that was the crux of the story of Walking Tall. Sheriff Buford Pusser came right out of Tulsa, that hit. So I was walking through these worlds of the biggest stories of what's happening now, and I was oblivious to it. It didn't matter to me. So we spent a lot of time in Oklahoma City. We thought the driver of the vehicle was a notorious bondsman in Oklahoma City that was suspect in several murders, a guy by the name of Dennis Bates Fletcher. He, to a T, resembled the driver. Obviously, he wasn't the driver. But the FBI was happy for us to go in that direction. They said, yeah, go there. Tell us the big stuff that you know, and we'll get back with you. I mean, really, seriously.
The FBI in Oklahoma? Or?
Well, FBI in Oklahoma, who is obviously reporting to FBI headquarters. This was a big deal to the FBI. I can say headquarters knew what was going on within days or weeks. They knew they had something going on there. They were at the only level, the FBI indexing and their data, their national or international data, and the mechanism that they had, the whole logistics. They were the only one that could put this together information-wise. They are wonderful with capturing and analyzing data. So they knew what was going on. And here we were in Oklahoma with no access to data, and we were just running down the best lead we had for literally a couple of years.
When you say FBI headquarters knew what was going on, they knew that this was underworld? Is that what
I believe so. I don't say that they knew how evil it was at that time, but they knew this was underworld. We met with the FBI in Oklahoma City, and you know, we talked to all the FBI organized crime jargon of La Cosa Nostra, LCN, all that kind of stuff. Chuck Jordan and I spent a lot of time, as well as another detective, a great guy who's retired and now literally dying, Dick Bishop. He and I were partners on this for several years before he retired and went to the sheriff's office. So we were chasing these ghosts who were very active criminals in Oklahoma City. We spent tons of time in Oklahoma City, although this happened in May. The first week of July, we had got a tip to go to Boston and met with the commander of the state police, Colonel O'Donovan, who very cryptically gave us a group of names. He said, these might be involved in your case. Well, how? Can't tell you. They knew what was going on. They knew what was happening.
The FBI in Boston.
No, the state police, Massachusetts State Police. They knew a small bit. They didn't know the whole story. And it turns out, in hindsight, 2020, when you put it all together, how they knew was that Brian Halloran had been offered this hit in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and declined it. And he knew who was behind it. Brian Halloran's brother was a trooper with the Massachusetts State Police, who eventually got a very limited subset of information from his brother up the chain of command to the colonel of the state police. So in that meeting, I believe there was a guy named Hammerschmidt, Richard Hammerschmidt, a lieutenant. From that, we walk away with this tiny bit of information. It's so cryptic. There's really no way to investigate it because there's no internet. There's no nothing. The criminal records, you just can't follow up on information back then like was needed. Years later, when all this started to unravel, knowing that there was an FBI task force that we assisted very closely in looking at the corruption end of what happened up there, They were ultimately the ones that indicted John Connally for his part. We came across, wow, Lieutenant Richard Hammerschmidt, retired from the Massachusetts State Police, that met with the Tulsa police weeks after this murder, was a boyhood friend of Steve Flemmi and ultimately got charged leaking information on these cases back to Steve Flemmi about what was going on. That circle was just closing in so many different directions, and so many people wanted to know what we were doing and where we were going with our information. Once we got that Oklahoma City stuff out of the way, you're talking 2 or 3 years before we put that to bed. We nearly lived in Oklahoma City.
That means the people involved in this, they felt they're targeting Oklahoma City. Surely they're not looking at us. For 2-3 years, they felt.
Right, absolutely. And then when they realized that we were kind of looking at them, they started dropping bogus reports in file as red herrings. I ultimately got to see all those reports, and I thought, oh my God, I remember saying this to this agent, and he is taking that and expounding on it and making it look like it's an official thing. It's a promising lead, trying to steer away from what was going on. So Wheeler gets killed May 27th, 81. On May 12th of 82, Brian Halloran had already gone to the FBI. Brian Halloran is the guy that they initially offered the hit to, that Flemmi and Bulger and Callahan had offered this hit to, and he says, I don't know.
So he's been a hitman for a while, Brian.
Oh, yeah.
Halloran.
He had a pending murder indictment that he was out of jail on right then. His motivation was to help himself out with that pending murder indictment. So he goes to the FBI thinking, well, this might just involve a retired agent, so maybe they'll listen to me. So in early 82, he goes to the FBI and says, hey, I got offered this hit on Wheeler out in Tulsa, and I declined it, and here's who's involved in it. And H. Paul Rico is really the inside man on this whole deal, and they're skimming $1 million, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, wow, this is good stuff, I would think, if the FBI had ever told us. They never told us. This was our local murder case, our investigation, and they're saying, we're not going to tell Tulsa, Oklahoma, because they'll get on it, and this thing will blow. So they did everything they could. The guys that were initially handling Halloran, I think, were honest guys, but they were working and reporting to the organized crime section who didn't want this thing solved because of the can of worms it would open up. And the U.S. Attorney's Office, the strike force attorney in Boston, Jeremiah O'Sullivan, he was getting his rock star kind of cases through the Boston FBI. He knew that the informants were Bulger and Flemmi. Nobody wanted to go there. It would upset the apple cart.
They felt Whitey and Flemmi were giving them good information about the mafia, so they kept protecting him because they kept getting information.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very simplistic explanation, but probably closest that you could ever get. I don't think that some of them really knew the depth of where all this was going, the dark, deep, corrupt depth of it. So they cut Brian Halloran loose. They had him in a protected house out on Cape Cod. It just didn't work out for Brian Halloran. Nobody on their side really wanted it to work out for Brian Halloran, but they finally said, hey, go on about your business. So that afternoon, Brian Halloran shows up on the wharf in Boston at maybe the Rusty Scupper Bar. He's trying to get a hold of these FBI agents saying, hey, they cut me loose. They threw me out of this house out on the Cape. I'm scared. So that word got back to John Connally that Brian Halloran had snitched off Whitey and that he is at the Rusty Scupper right now. Callahan's not knowing what to do. So he gets a ride to go away from the Rusty Scupper. And they knew that he was leaving. They already had a surveillance set up. The word had got to Whitey. And Whitey and a couple other guys did a surveillance. They had on disguises and ski masks. They had their undercover car, and they were loaded for bear. Brian Halloran gets a ride away from the bar with just Mr. Normal, a guy named Michael Donahue. Michael Donahue's dad was a sergeant for the Boston Police Department. He was a family man. He was like a pillar in the neighborhood. Everybody loved him. He worked. He just said, yeah, I'll give you a ride. They drove up on that car and opened fire with rifles and whatever, and killed both Brian Halloran and Michael Donahue.
So that would be Whitey Bulger.
Whitey Bulger.
And?
A driver, and a guy named Kevin Weeks, which by this time was Whitey's little right-hand man gopher. Whitey mainly is the one that had the rifle and killed these guys. That was May 12th, 1982. We had no clue about Brian Halloran. The FBI never shared the story that Brian Halloran told him. The FBI just kept this secret and would have always kept this secret, except their little monsters got out of their cage and went and killed Brian Halloran. So May 13th, 1982, I'm at my annual range qualification day at about 9 in the morning. I got a call at the range. Really, the call was for any detectives on a range day to report to the detective division immediately. I get down there, and Major Glanz is there.
Who is now sheriff of Tulsa County.
He is sheriff of Tulsa County and a great guy, a wonderful friend of mine. He had a very cryptic story. He goes, you guys need to go out and hit all the motels, look for these three or four names. Martirano, McDonald. They gave us three or four names. So everybody was splitting up the town. I'll take West Tulsa, you take East, you know, that kind of stuff. And there's 20 guys going out to view these hotel records, which were all little 3x5 cards at that time, looking for that time the year before. I stay behind for a minute, and what's going on? He said, I don't really know what's going on, but something happened yesterday in Boston, and maybe somebody got killed, and this is information. He told me some details, but I was more confused at the end of it, as he was. So we went out about our business, and then I got a hold of a FBI agent here locally, ultimately able to track him down in a day or so, and said, what the hell's going on? So he tells me a real sanitized version, probably the information he had received. He didn't sanitize it himself, but it made me feel like, wow, something big is going on. Something's afoot here. This was mid-May. We had to start from ground zero.
How did Major Glanz at the time get these names? The FBI in Boston?
It had to be the FBI in Tulsa, call Major Glanz, and didn't give him any information. Of course, he didn't have the depth of information that we had. He just knew, hey, this is what's going on. So,